How many of you like Star Wars? By a show of hands. Okay. I was a much bigger fan years ago. Here's another question. How many of you like the newer films? Yeah, I see some wishy-washy. For the next 30 minutes, we will be talking about Star Wars. No, I think I saw all of the new ones, and I say I think, obviously they didn't make a huge impact on my life, but when I saw the new films, I had reactions to them, and these reactions were based on the old films, like, that's not Star Wars, or that's not how Jedi act, or that's so different from the other ones, I can't believe they added that. Maybe some of you had some of those reactions. Obviously, I was a huge fan of the new films, right? Anyways, I brought my own opinions, my preconceived notions, ready for this new experience. It's kind of like arguing with someone, and you can play out a whole argument before it even happens, like a conflict. And I encourage you, try that with your spouse today. I'm sure it'll go well. You can say, they always, and Rachel and I have these arguments where we'll say, I knew you were going to say that. And I'm sure that's not unfamiliar to all of you out there. Turn with me, if you would, to 2 Kings 5. 2 Kings chapter 5. We're going to look at a story today. The story of Naaman. And just the first part, because there's so much more to his story that I think warrants a longer and larger message. Let's start in verse 1. 2 Kings 5, verse 1. Now Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Aram, or Syria. I'm sure a lot of your New King James versions will say Syria. Let me preface this by saying I'm reading out of the NIV today, just because I think the story is told very clearly in the NIV. He was a great man in the sight of his master and highly regarded, because through him the Lord had given victory to Aram. He was a valiant soldier, but he had leprosy. So Naaman, and I'm probably not pronouncing that wonderfully, but Naaman was not an Israelite, but he was a well-known commander for this army. Now let's go to verse 2. Now bands from Aram had gone out and taken captive a young girl from Israel, and she served Naaman's wife. She said to her mistress, if only my master would see the prophet who was in Samaria, who was in Israel, he would cure him of his leprosy. So the next few verses describe Naaman's superior, the king, as he writes to the Israelite king, requesting Naaman to visit this prophet for healing. The Israelite king at the time, who was Joram, reacts to this in fear, misreading the intentions as aggression. And the prophet that everyone's referring to that could provide this healing, the man whom the captive girl spoke of, this was Elisha at the time. And Elisha calms the king and says, let Naaman come. So let's take a look at some of the details here. Naaman goes with silver, gold, and clothing to purchase healing from this prophet. And you can already see that Naaman has an expectation of how this will play out. He is seeking healing. He's kind of taking a chance, right? This is not really his religion, his belief system. You can make a little bit some assumptions about Naaman here. Maybe he's a bit of a free agent spiritually, and he's tried some things here, tried some things there. Well, you actually get some context further of what he believes in as you dive into 2 Kings 5. He's taking this chance to see Elisha. So let's go to verse 9 and 10 now. Verse 9 says, so Naaman went with his horses and chariots and stopped at the door of Elisha's house. Elisha sent a messenger to him. Go wash yourself 7 times in the Jordan, and your flesh will be restored and you will be cleansed. So he takes this chance, but Elisha isn't there. And Naaman travels all this way, possibly, likely expecting to see this great man, this spectacle. this healer, and he's met by a messenger with obscure, somewhat mundane instructions. Go wash in the Jordan 7 times. Let's take a look at his reaction. Verse 11. But Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot, and cure me of my leprosy. I thought he would be here. I thought he would call on this God and wave his hands, do some magical stuff, whatever, you know, stuff that I'm used to. I'm healed, and then I pay him. Then I leave. Now, I've had this type of reaction so many times. Not this exact reaction, but this type of reaction, right? That's not what I expected. Why can't it be the way that I'm comfortable with? And Naaman obviously lacked faith in God. He's not coming from historical experience in his life of faith in God. But here's the first key point of the message today. My first point is, personal expectations and faith don't always coexist. Personal expectations and faith don't always coexist. In fact, the less faith you have, the more you depend on your assumptions. So I'll take a kind of a silly example here, but let's pick on Chick-fil-A. Sorry, Addison, but we're going to pick on Chick-fil-A. My faith in Chick-fil-A delivering my order 100% accurately was so much higher years ago. I don't know what happened. Maybe this is a shared experience. Maybe not. Maybe it was COVID. Maybe it's just me getting grumpier. Workers are getting worse. Not you, Addison. We know that. But skip ahead to now. Whenever we order something at Chick-fil-A, my assumptions are something's going to be wrong with this order. So we're always checking the bag. We're looking around. I mean, one time they got, it was like 5 things in a row in like one order. It was shockingly bad. But the less faith I have in Chick-fil-A means I depend more on this assumption. It's kind of a silly example, but hopefully it gets the point across. Let's assume Naaman is starting from zero here. Like your first time at Chick-fil-A, there's potential for faith. There's a potential for trust to grow. But he didn't have that life experience built up to that point of trusting in God. Again, taking this type of chance to see another God, another person of faith for another God, it can tell you a little bit about who he is. Let's read 11 again and go into 12. And that'll lead us into the next point. So verse 11, again, but Naaman went away angry and said, I thought that he would surely come out to me and stand and call on the name of the Lord his God, wave his hand over the spot and cure me of my leprosy. Are not Abana and I've read this in preparing this message, and I didn't even think to pronounce that word. Pharpar, the rivers of Damascus, better than any of the waters of Israel? Couldn't I wash in them and be cleansed? So he turned away and went off in rage. So that leads to my next point. It's a simple one, but expectations are built from life experience. Just like the Chick-fil-A example I gave you. And just like the Star Wars example I gave you as well. The other movies shaped my desire and my expectation for the new movies. If those new movies were the first ones, I probably would have liked them more. And I really hope this message doesn't get misinterpreted into a Star Wars debate after services. I promise you, you probably will not like my current opinion. But consider some of the biases and expectations that we have. Just as people that we exist in the year 2024, in Georgia, United States of America, United Church of God. There's a lot of things that that's caked on to us just being here. And I'll share some of mine and some others. ideas like individualism, that's fairly Western. Freedom. Here's a really specific one, but and you might share this as well. But when I travel in the United States, I expect in the room I'm staying in, I expect there to be heating and cooling. That's not everywhere. I expect clean water wherever we go here in the United States. That's not everywhere. My expectations on fairness are built off of years in public schools, TV shows, sports, church, on and on. Your expectations on romance can be impacted by movies, culture, stories. We need to understand we have a set amount of experience on this earth. It's shaped by a generation and molded by a culture. And we often try to fit that into our God. We try to fit God into our personal comfort zone. Naaman was familiar with gods. In fact, it says it later on. If you read in verse 5, he talks about worshiping another deity. Prophets, he's likely familiar with, you know, magicians and healers who claim that they can heal. And he was probably familiar with paying for these types of actions happening. And it was practiced in a certain way. So he came to Elisha with these assumptions. Now, pause just on verse 12. Those rivers that I can't pronounce, but he's saying, why can't I go to those waters? And so the waters of Israel, can I just go to a different river and be cleansed? What's going on here? Why do I have to do this? Consider that while we look at point number 3. What expectations do you have that don't align with God? I've had a lot of these conversations many times in my life. Questions like, and these aren't necessarily my questions, these are just questions that have come up in conversation. Why couldn't Jesus have made it easier to understand that he is the Son of God? I'm sure you might have heard that in conversations. I've had that conversation previously with a believer in the faith of Islam. It was just back and forth, back and forth. He didn't make it clear that he was the Son of God. Well, okay, what are you not seeing here? And it's just back and forth. Why couldn't he just state it? Well, he does, but translation, so it goes back and forth. Given my experience, given his culture, the person that didn't believe that, he should have said it like this, because that's how I would have said it. Why did he have to die? I wouldn't have written the story that way. Now, there's a difference. Here's the caveat. There's a difference in honest questions when you're learning and trying to prove this way and trying to fit scripture into your comfort zone. Or here's a big one nowadays. Or I don't think a loving God would do blank because of my 2024 definition of love. You go down the line of concepts that are being consistently reframed by culture. Go down the line. Mercy, love, diversity, relationships, salvation. All of these are consistently reframed and repackaged. Don't make God into something. He already is. So let's read 13 through 15 to kind of finish out this story. So Naaman's off in a rage. He asked those questions. And Naaman's servants, in verse 13, went to him and said, "My father, if the prophet had told you to do some great thing, would you not have done it? How much more then when he tells you, wash and be cleansed?" So he went down and dipped himself in the Jordan 7 times, as the man of God had told him. And his flesh was restored and became clean like that of a young boy. Then Naaman and all his attendants went back to the man of God. He stood before him and said, "Now I know that there is no God in all the world except in Israel. Please accept now a gift from your servant." So it ends up he's talked down and he actually does the action. Now, if we had more time to continue, I believe this is probably a split sermon. Not today, don't worry, but or a sermonette part 2, because the rest of Naaman's story is very interesting, filled with lessons. Obviously, he wants to pay for this. Elisha says no. Naaman asks for preemptive forgiveness, which I thought was really interesting. He asks for when I'm going to go and be in another temple of another god, can you forgive me? There's something there to really look at, but that's for another message. Elisha's servant is punished for greed. There's so much in this chapter 5. As they say, it's for another time. But what about this story that we're kind of focusing on? Again, we know our culture, our generation, our own expectations mold us. And sometimes this is separate from God. And one thing I despise, and I'm sure some of you can pick up on this from the way I'm talking, is revisionist history. That meaning looking back on events and reframing based upon the current cultural lens. And culture is always shifting, right? So things are being redefined. Oh, Jesus was a humanist. Oh, no, Jesus was a feminist. Oh, Jesus was Jesus. So with our experience and our culture always shifting, who and what are we tied to? What's our North Star for culture, for expectations, for who to be like? And I've just mentioned him, but he will always be the life of Jesus Christ. Because look at how he came in the world in many ways like us, in many ways not like us, born into a generation, born into a culture, but Jesus was the ultimate bias and culture breaker. He showed how the ways of generations are down here on earth, and he wanted us to follow a higher way, not to just adhere to the base level ways, the natural ways, a different way, a narrow way. And that's who we got to look to when we're doubting our own biases or, wow, I haven't even thought of that. I do have a certain way I think about mercy or love. Go back to the way Jesus lived. And when we do that, you would be a person that when you'd hear the instructions of go to the Jordan 7 times and wash yourself, you know what you'd say? Oh, sure, of course. Yeah, no problem. How fast can I get there? You wouldn't say, well, that's not really how they did it, you know, or how I expect it. You know, that's not really how my narrative should go. So let's consider what we bring to the table and with humility follow a better and higher way of life.